A lot has been said about North Carolina's controversial bill banning transgendered people from using the bathroom of their preference. Before writing about that bill, columnist James Causey talked to Noor Andrews, who was born male but has since transitioned. How does Noor feel about North Carolina's law and similar laws proposed in Wisconsin?
I think it's really harmful, and it is discrimination against a class of people who are just trying to be themselves.
We'll hear more from James Causey and Noor Andrews later in today's Behind the Headlines. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Gina Barton and photographer Mark Hoffman recently visited Vermont. They were there to research a program that helps high-risk sex offenders and violent felons from committing new crimes. The program is called Circles of Support and Accountability, and it's incredibly successful. The question is, can these approaches work in other places? Could it work in Wisconsin? Gina talked with reporter Mary Louise Schumacher about the story.
So Gina, you recently spent some time in Vermont studying these circles that kind of give ex-offenders support. Why is it so different in Vermont, and why did you go there for this research?
The circle started in Canada, and all the experts have said a lot of places do circles, but the only place that does them right is Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons is because it's such a small state with so few offenders, they can really do it right. It's a very labor-intensive kind of program that focuses on a lot of one-on-one interaction. So circles of support and accountability are kind of like mini support groups for people who have gotten out of prison. Usually most effectively used with sex offenders and high-risk violent felons who are at risk of reoffending. And what they do is they surround the ex-offender when he gets out of prison with three or four community volunteers and then also a circle coordinator. They meet once a week and they help him with all kinds of things, everything from how to use a cell phone to how to interview for a job. And when they work well, they end up really becoming friends with this ex-offender and welcoming him back into the community.
And this circle, so there's one offender per circle, right? And then everybody else is volunteers, right?
Right. There's one, so there's one staff member who's the coordinator, and then there are three or four volunteers and one offender. So essentially, it's members of the community spending at least 1 hour a week for a year just helping this one guy.
Yeah. And what kind of offenders are eligible in Vermont for this program? And is it hard for them to get into this program?
Basically, the process is most effective with sex offenders. And I'm sure you can imagine why, because they have more problems, right? They have a lot of places they can't live. There's this huge social stigma against sex offenders, which some people would say rightfully so, but then other people would say, well, if you just throw him out there to the wolves, he's probably going to do it again. Whereas if you try to have a positive influence on him and help him realize that he's more than his offense, maybe he can actually change his life.
So you went to some of these circles. What was that like?
Mark Hoffman, the photojournalist, and I went to two of them, and it was actually really cool. The thing that I found most striking is they call it a circle of support and accountability, and I think when most of us think of accountability, we think of, like, we're going to call your parole officer and rat you out if you do something wrong, but it was much more subtle than that. Like, the armed robber I was telling you about came into the circle and his wallet had just been stolen. And, you know, in the past, this guy told me he would have gotten a crew together and beaten up the guy that he thought did it. But instead, you know, he came to his circle, he told them about it, and they said, well, you know, are you tempted to try and go after this guy? And he said, no, you know, it's probably the universe's way of, you know, getting back at me.
Yeah.
And they asked him, you know, how do you feel about your ability to make judgments on this? And it's kind of just calling him on his feelings and his reactions and potential reactions. Mm-hmm. That's a form of accountability.
So it sounds like there's a lot of trust in this circle. And I mean, it's so interesting to think that there are people in the world who would volunteer to do this once a week for a year. Who are these people who volunteer?
Well, for the most part, I know this is going to shock you. They're pretty liberal individuals. a lot of retirees, mm-hmm. people who have worked in social services, like former teachers, mm-hmm. principals, social workers. A lot of moms. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of people who kind of have had some of their own issues that they were able to get past. You know, one woman had been arrested for having a small amount of marijuana back in her youth and saw that, like, she could have gone off the path, too.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy had been in AA for a couple of decades mm-hmm. and could really relate to people who had substance abuse issues and wanted mm-hmm. to help them. Mm-hmm. So it comes from the heart, I think.
Mm-hmm. And are any of the programs that are happening in Wisconsin in any way comparable to what you saw in Vermont?
Mark and I spent some time at Madison Area Urban Ministry, mm-hmm. and it seems as if their program is comparable. It's mm-hmm. very small. Mm-hmm. It's resource-strapped, mm-hmm. But they actually had the one-on-one, you know, or the four-on-one, mm-hmm. the one offender and lots of volunteers surrounding them.
Mm-hmm.
But even that one, it seems to me the Department of Corrections really has to buy in. Mm-hmm. So in Vermont, you've got the probation and parole officer on board, mm-hmm. and you've got relationships with landlords, and you've got employers who mm-hmm. are, you know, part of this network. And I'm not seeing that as much here in Wisconsin. Everybody I talked to in Vermont was really convinced that the only reason why it works is that they have this statewide network of community justice centers, which are essentially the homes for restorative justice in each and every community in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps in terms of getting the funding from the state, and it also helps with recruiting the volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Some people there, it's practically their full-time job to just find volunteers for
mm-hmm.
these programs.
Mm-hmm.
Other states have tried it and been less successful mm-hmm. just because there isn't that same commitment to this form of community justice and restorative justice.
To read Gina's story and see Mark's photographs, go to jsonline.com. Now that the weather is warming up, it's time to head outside, even to watch a movie. And that's easy to do because a growing number of communities and organizations in the Milwaukee area are screening free outdoor movies. Entertainment editor Chris Foran talks with Emily Risto about what you can see for free this spring and summer.
What are some of the movies or events that you're looking forward to this summer?
Well, seeing movies outside has become a bigger and bigger thing in the Milwaukee area the last couple of years, especially for families, events that are designed to target kids. So there's a lot of the movies that if you haven't seen it and it's animated, there's a pretty good chance you can see it this summer. At least four communities are showing the Minions movie this summer, where you can see Inside Out at some theaters or some outdoor venues. Star Wars, Force Awakens, last year's big movie, is playing in a lot of locations. It's really become a more popular thing, I think, for families. But there are some of these events that are aimed at, you know, grown-ups as well.
So what would be like a good pick for a family with young kids as far as which of these parks or events?
Well, there are a couple of interesting series. The one that's always fun to go to for families is the one in Veterans Park, and they start their series called Lakefront Movies in Veterans Park. That's right north of the Art Museum on the lakefront. They start on June 11th with Inside Out, and they're also showing Jurassic World and a good Labor Day weekend double feature of Galaxy Quest and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which could be fun.
Mm-hmm.
There are also, there's one in the that outdoor pavilion, Peck Pavilion at Marcus, at the Marcus Center downtown. Mm-hmm. They have movies in August. Waukesha has a first time they've ever done through their Parks and Recreation Department. They have a new Monday Night at the Movies series, which starts in June 13th with American Graffiti, which is a great movie. Not really a kid movie, but it's a great movie. But they go all the way through mid-August, and they're showing things like Raiders of the Lost Ark, Aladdin, Wizard of Oz, but also Grease, and, of course, Minions.
Mm-hmm.
There are some in the roundup that we put together for Friday's weekend section. There are some series that we don't have information yet on, but they'll be coming later in the season, and especially ones that are aimed more at grown-ups, like
the, yeah.
Fish Fry and a Flick, which is a pretty popular series that runs outside Discovery World on the lakefront. You can buy a fish fry that's put together by the Bartolotta group, and they haven't nailed down their schedule yet, but they'll do that soon. And then there's the Bike In movie series, which runs under the swing at Swing Park off the Holton Marsupial Bridge on the Lower East Side near Trocadero, and that's become a popular thing where people ride their bikes and they go see the movies. One that's becoming I wouldn't say more popular, but it's kind of getting drawing some attention, is a thing called Paul's Alley Cinema, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a guy puts some chairs up in an alley in Walker's Point. He's been doing this for more than a decade, almost 2 decades, I think. And he kind of makes his pick at the middle of the week and says, here's what we're going to show. I think this week he's showing a horror movie from 1960. He showed Gypsy last week, which is a 1962 mm-hmm. musical. He shows a lot of old stuff. It's got a following. It's kind of interesting. They're all over the place. But the big attractions are these ones that run in city parks that have, maybe sometimes they have games, sometimes they have free popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're mostly family oriented.
So, what if you're headed to one of these outdoor movies? What should you bring?
Well, first you should bring the good sense to check to see if it's going to rain.
Yeah.
Because in Milwaukee, we have bad. Some summers where weekends all seem to be rain. Most of these are on Saturday nights, but a lot of them, there are some that are during the week. So first thing you do is check the forecast. Second mm-hmm. thing is bring something you feel comfortable sitting on. If it's mm-hmm. a lawn chair or, a blanket, they usually show them on a slightly elevated screen so that you can see it from pretty far away. It's like going to a drive-in movie without the car, except sometimes you can have a car. In New Berlin, for example, every year they do one of the summer movies they show it as a drive-in movie where you can bring your car up in this parking lot and watch the movie from your car. I think this year they're showing, guess what, Minions. something to nosh on, something to drink. It's most of these are in public parks, so liquor is probably not the best bet, but there's usually, some of them will have vendors there, some of them will have food available. Last year, South Milwaukee had what they called dinner in a movie, where they had tie-ins with local restaurants.
If you want to start planning your outdoor movie adventures, head to tapmilwaukee.com. You'll find Chris's guide to free outdoor movies there. Across the country, downtown shopping malls have struggled as shoppers flock to suburban stores instead. But one form of rejuvenation that could be instructive for Milwaukee's Grand Avenue Mall is taking place out west. Journal Sentinel business reporter Tom Dakin traveled to Oakland last week to give readers a glimpse of what could be in the making downtown. He sat down with Tom Content to talk about his trip.
This is business reporter Tom Content, and I'm here with Tom Dakin, our commercial real estate writer.
Hello, and folks.
How are you doing? So you took a trip. Where'd you go?
I went to Oakland, California.
And what the heck for?
I went there because in downtown Oakland, there is a building that's being redeveloped from a former department store, former Sears department store, into offices on the upper level and retail on the ground level. And that's pretty similar to what the new owners of the Grand Avenue hope to accomplish here in downtown Milwaukee.
And the Grand Avenue has been going through ownership change?
Yeah. A group of new owners bought it in December, and about 3 weeks ago they unveiled their plans and talked about how they want to transform much of it into office space. And they specifically cited this Oakland project, known as Uptown Station, as a model for what they hope to do here. It's a little different in that this is a former department store, not a former, or well, an urban mall, which is what Grand Avenue is now. But it's essentially the same, transforming retail into office space. And the properties are both similar in that they both have seen better days. Grand Avenue, of course, opened in 1982, had about a 10-year run of success, and then saw its sales dwindle when the retailers at the Grand Avenue opened stores at other locations, and people naturally went and shopped at the places closer where they live.
The suburban malls.
Right, right. And what happened in Oakland was you had a building that was built in 1929 for H.C. Capwell, which is a local department store chain. And after several decades, it began to go the way most downtown department stores were going. It became a Sears, and unfortunately, Sears has had their problems. So it did eventually downsize to, I think, two of the seven floors in that very, very large building. The Oakland building was sold about 2 years ago to a developer in the San Francisco area, Lane Partners, which was best known for developing buildings in Silicon Valley for tech companies, office buildings for tech companies.
I sense a tech connection coming.
You do sense a tech connection. And with Lane's involvement, that's exactly what happened. Last September, it was announced that Uber was going to be buying the building from Lane, using most of it, again, those upper floors for offices. Is going to be a second corporate office building beyond Uber's ever-growing headquarters in San Francisco, just across the bay from Oakland. And that the street level would be retail, restaurants and stores. The other interesting similarity here between Milwaukee and Oakland is, in both cases, the building owners want to really reconnect the building into the street and make it much more publicly accessible. That's been a goal of the owners of the Grand Avenue. They want to revamp the main entrance at 3rd and West Wisconsin Avenue, make it much more inviting, and they want to have other better access points for pedestrians onto West Wisconsin Avenue. In Oakland, a big part of the value of that property that attracted Lane Partners to buy it and then subsequently sell it to Uber was the fact that it sits on top of one of the busiest stations in the Bay Area rapid transit system, the BART system. And the building will be, when it's renovated, will actually have a direct connection into that BART station. That's a big part of its attempt to be more publicly accessible.
Mm-hmm. So what's the challenge here in duplicating this in Milwaukee? Maybe it's because we don't have an Uber?
Sadly, we don't have Uber. But there are tenants that are in the suburban areas that have been moving into downtown, and there are other tenants that are showing interest in moving downtown. One is Master Lock, which is based in Oak Creek, which might relocate. And we also have downtown tenants that have relocated. We had Godfrey and Kahn relocate earlier this year, moved to the new building that was opened down at East Michigan Street, just off of Lincoln Memorial. And the Reinhardt Law Firm at 1000 North Water is one that real estate sources say might indeed relocate, and that would be a possible candidate for this space as well.
Good. Well, thanks for that overview, Tom.
You bet. Thank you, Tom.
Visit jsonline.com for Tom's story on Oakland, his land and space blog, and his JS Online commercial real estate database. The trans community is growing in Wisconsin and across the country. That fact compelled columnist James Causey to write about issues facing the trans community, including legislation regarding bathrooms, such as the legislation from North Carolina. As I mentioned earlier, James talked to Noor Andrews, who was born male but lives her life as a woman. Noor said she would feel strange if she was forced to use the men's bathroom. Here's the audio from her interview with James.
Can you state your name for me, please?
My name is Noor Andrews.
Hi. So we're talking about the controversial North Carolina bathroom bill. What's your take on it?
I think it's really harmful, and it is discrimination against a class of people who are just trying to be themselves.
And what's your story? You have a story to tell.
I was born in Iraq, moved here 8 years ago. start my transition, of course, I've always knew that I was trans, and I started my transition 3 years ago. The almost two and a half years of when I made the decision that I will transition to live full-time as a woman, I was living part-time, meaning that I was living at home as a woman and at work as a man still. Until October of 2015, I made the decision that that's it. I am ready to go to work as myself, and I made the decision. Told my HR department, my management, everybody was extremely supportive, which I was so lucky and fortunate to have. And my supervisors, my coworkers, I told them on Friday. The Monday after, I came as myself, and nobody treats me any differently.
What does being trans mean?
To me, being transgender is, I mean, this has been always, like, used, the terms like, I'm trapped in the wrong body. It is true, because what I feel inside is different from what I see out on the outside. And in my case, and everybody else's, I mean, transgender individuals, we always try to make what we feel inside matches how we look on the outside. Because before I transitioned, I always saw myself like this. And now, when I look in the mirror, I see the reflection that I've always seen in my mind.
So, would you say when you were at work, you were not being yourself, or?
Absolutely. Actually, a couple of my coworkers, they commented on that after I came out to them. It was like the Friday when I told HR, I was like, okay, you guys, you're very close to me. I want to, like, tell you this is going to happen. I want you to know first, because we were, you know, we were as a team. After I transitioned, I started, you know, socializing more with them, joking around, laughing, or, you know, just being myself. And some of them commented like, well, you were always to yourself, and we didn't see the real you. And I told them, well, I hid the real me because I wasn't ready to show it to everybody else.
So, I guess the million-dollar question, which bathroom do you use now? Which bathroom did you use?
I use the women's bathroom. Before my transition, of course, I identified as male, so I used to use the men's bathroom before.
What would it be like today if you were forced to use the men's bathroom?
It would be horrible. And I would ask you the same question. How would you feel if I use the men's bathroom next to you?
Right. I mean, it's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that sums it up. I mean, it's one of those kind of issues that I think people are going to either be on one side of the fence or another side. But your story is impactful, and I hope it opens eyes to people out there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
For more on this story, read James's column in today's Crossroads section. His column is also available online at jsonline.com/opinion. And on that note, I'll wrap up today's Behind the Headlines. Thanks so much for listening. Once again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. If you're interested in listening to more podcasts from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, check us out on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. You can also find our work at jsonline.com/podcasts. Take care until next week.